Jason Zinnemann is a theater critic and reporter for the New York Times. He's also the author of Shock Value: How a Few Eccentric Outsiders Gave Us Nightmares, Conquered Hollywood, and Invented Modern Horror. The book chronicles the careers of directors like Wes Craven and John Carpenter, who revolutionized horror movies during the 1970s. Zinnemann calls their approach the new horror to distinguish it from the old horror populated by vampires and werewolves. What else is different?
There is an increased emphasis on realism. And I think you could simplify the horror genre into two strains, which is one, which is a kind of surreal strain, and one, which is a realistic strain. And realism, informed by cinema verite and documentary and news reports, became much more common, both in the form, the way that they were shot, they kind of had the look of a grittier, more handheld feel, but also in the content, that it wasn't about a werewolf and a vampire. The horror was located in the prom queen and going to the beach and a little girl, you know, next door. So they were very relatable horrors. So that's one thing. I think the second thing is the horror became much more disorienting. There were many more unhappy endings or unexplained kinds of evil. What I argue in the book is that a lot of these directors were influenced by this one writer, H.P. Lovecraft, who said that the oldest and strongest emotion in mankind is fear, and the strongest kind, I'm paraphrasing here, the strongest kind of fear is fear of the unknown. And I think that's a very profound statement and probably the most important sentence ever written about the horror genre, and explains a lot of what these directors of this period understood about what scares us. Lessons that I think are surprisingly many directors since have forgotten.
One of the things that people think about when they look at the development of new horror films was how much, as you say, more real they were, but also how much more blood there was, how much more perception of violence as something in our lives rather than removed from our lives.
Yes, definitely. Gore and graphic violence was not invented in this period, but it was certainly increased. And also, I think there was a political edge to it. There was a sense that, among some people like Wes Craven, that the news media wasn't showing the violence in Vietnam. And so, of course, he was making an exploitation film, but he also has a political point to this violence, which is to show you the ugliness of violence. The other major change is in the monster. Until this point, the horror monsters, largely established by the classic Universal movies, were vampires, werewolves, ghosts. So what happened in this period is that Romero's version of this flesh-eating zombie that's going to take over the world was introduced, and the serial killer became probably the dominant monster of the period. So those were huge shifts, and the serial killer clearly was not a supernatural figure, although he had sometimes had elements of it. When you had your main monster who wasn't a supernatural figure, it could be somebody who was much more ordinary and realistic.
Yeah, somebody who could be in your life.
In a lot of ways, horror films are not about narrative, clearly. Like, there's often very simple narratives. Some movies, that's not true, but I think the interesting narrative in a lot of these movies has to do with the development of the point of view. I mean, a movie like Halloween is a classic example. There's a story about the stalker stalking babysitters, but it's not that interesting. The real narrative of the movie is how John Carpenter, the director, shifts the point of view from the point of view of the killer to the point of view of the victim to the point of view of the observer. That's the really fascinating thing. It's dizzying for the audience member.
Halloween was one of the most successful horror films, one of the most successful films ever made, I suppose. Did it really change things?
You could make an argument that Halloween is the most imitated movie of all time, which is incredible when you consider it was made in like a month on a tiny budget. It didn't have a national release. It began in city to city. But it has spawned so many imitators. A lot of what my book tries to do is look at where some of the key elements of Halloween come from. And I think I uncover a lot of things that haven't been out there through reporting. But I think, you know, the key elements are this point of view shot. It wasn't the first director to show from the killer's point of view, but he popularized it. He wasn't the first director to have a killer with a mask, but it certainly popularized it. What a lot of people took from it was this sort of getting killed after having sex, teenagers having sex, this kind of body count movies, which there is a long tradition of in Italian horror, particularly the decade before. The real innovation of Halloween, which ironically hasn't been ripped off as much, is actually the killer, Michael Myers, because Michael Myers was a human being, but he was also not really. He didn't really walk like a human being or move like a human. He didn't run. He seemed to be everywhere at once. He had no psychology. He had no backstory. His kills, he seemed to take no pleasure from or do for any reason at all. And what's interesting is that Carpenter strenuously establishes this very naturalistic landscape of an ultimately ordinary suburban America and then puts inside this world this incredibly avant-garde, experimental, weird kind of anti-character.
I met this 6-year-old child with this blank, pale, emotionless face and the blackest eyes, the devil's eyes. I spent 8 years trying to reach him, and then another 7 trying to keep him locked up because I realized that what was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.
I think the horror of Halloween is in how unexplainable Michael Myers is. And a lot of filmmakers have since figured this out, and I think you see it in a movie like No Country for Old Men. But the immediate imitators, like the Friday the 13th series and all the slasher series in the 80s, did not choose to single that part out.
There's another part of it that you write about that's fascinating. You say that music played a key part in Halloween's success, right?
Huge. In fact, if I was to write this book again, if there was one thing I would really beef up, I think, is the role of sound design.
Well, what was so different about this one that brought so much to your attention?
Carpenter wrote a classic synthesizer soundtrack to announce The Killer Coming, which is as well known as the John Williams music to announce The Shark and Jaws. The way movies are today is that you make the movie and then people put the music to correlate to the scene. And the way the Carpenter music plays is almost like the movie sort of fits around the music. And just the sound of it is chilling. And anyone who hears it now, and you see it pop up in movies all the time.
It was, what, 1979 when Alien came out, that science fiction horror film that is probably better known in some ways than the others, and maybe taken more seriously. The screenplay was written by a film school friend of John Carpenter's, Dan O'Bannon. Can you tell us about him?
Yeah, Dan O'Bannon, I think, you know, in a lot of ways, he is the least well-known figure who I read about, and his legacy, I think, you know, it's something that I'm most proud of, the fact that I got this story into this book, especially before he passed away, because he's a major figure and he's been undervalued for a lot of reasons that have to do with politics, I believe. You know, I think the key decisions that went into Alien, and you're right, I think Alien is in some ways the one, you know, the greatest horror movie of this period, that and Chainsaw, and certainly had a huge impact, that the really key decisions were made by O'Bannon. One is the chest burster scene, which is the most famous scene in horror since the shower psycho scene. Two, he hired the Swiss designer Giger to design the monster, which was a really unpredictable move at the time, that this was a guy who had no experience in Hollywood movies. The monster in Alien was unlike any that had been seen before. You know, if you look at the costumes in the Lady Gaga concert, they're patterned after the alien monster, has had a huge impact on gothic culture. And, you know, the weird kind of sexual imagery that's in that monster is totally different than has been seen before. And I think there was a certain kind of Lovecraftian element in that movie, and the sense that the first victim was a man. The imagery was man was raped. You know, the alien kind of impregnated him, and then it came out. That was very different than most of the horror victims at the time.
Well, and one of the things you write about that makes it actually even more horrifying in retrospect, because I don't think anybody knew this at the time, was the source of the idea for that horrible scene when the alien bursts out. Can you tell us about that?
It was very tragic because Dan O'Bannon just passed away, but he passed away because he had suffered with Crohn's disease, and he struggled with this and tried to keep it quiet because he thought it would hurt his career, but he struggled with a really extreme stomach pain his whole life. Well, what I love about this, and I find this again and again, is that, you know, the source of this incredibly famous and wonderful scene is personal. Oftentimes people who talk about, you know, the political implications of the horror, or they're doing it for commercial reasons. But again and again, if you look at these movies, if you look at where Wes Craven's interest comes from, if you look at where Dan O'Bannon's, is that it's like, you know, any other artist that gets the proper respect. You know, Eugene O'Neill's plays, his best plays come from personal things in his life. These directors, when they tried to come up with the scariest thing they could, they would root around in their mind to what really, really terrified them. And this is something that was a day-to-day concern. something is brewing inside my stomach and wants to get out. And he came up with this incredible scene for me.
Oh, God!
Oh, no!
Don't touch it! Don't touch it!
Jason Zinnemann is the author of Shock Value, How a Few Eccentric Outsiders Gave Us Nightmares, Conquered Hollywood, and Invented Modern Horror.